Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Devil Emails at Midnight, What Good Leaders Can Learn from Bad Bosses by Mita Malik frames leadership growth through an uncomfortable but familiar lens, the bosses who made work harder than it needed to be. Drawing on widely discussed workplace realities, the book explores how damaging management habits show up in everyday moments, such as late-night messages, performative urgency, vague feedback, favoritism, and a culture where people feel watched rather than supported. Instead of treating bad leadership as mere venting material, Malik positions it as data that can sharpen your own management instincts and professional boundaries. The central promise is practical: identify the patterns that erode trust and well-being, understand why they persist, and replace them with behaviors that make teams safer, clearer, and more effective. With an emphasis on accountability, communication, and humane standards, this book speaks to both emerging managers and experienced leaders who want to build cultures where people can do great work without burning out. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, midnight messages and the culture of constant urgency. A defining symbol in the book is the late-night email, not because after-hours work never happens, but because it reveals how leaders set norms. When a boss repeatedly sends midnight requests, the real message is that boundaries are optional and response speed matters more than quality. This topic examines how constant urgency becomes a management style that substitutes panic for planning. Teams begin to optimize for appearing available rather than doing deep, focused work. People also internalize the idea that rest is a weakness, which raises burnout risk and increases turnover, especially among caregivers and those with less schedule flexibility. The leadership lesson is that good bosses design systems that prevent false emergencies. That includes clarifying what truly counts as urgent, using delayed send features, setting response time expectations, and rotating on-call duties when real, after-hours coverage is required. It also means modeling the behavior you want. If you say boundaries matter but reward late-night heroics, your team will follow the rewards. The broader takeaway is that time is a leadership tool. Protecting it, both yours and your team's, improves decision-making, reduces mistakes, and builds trust that performance is measured by outcomes rather than constant availability. Secondly, clarity is compassion, goals, roles, and decision rights. Bad bosses often create confusion and then punish people for not reading minds. This topic focuses on how ambiguity shows up in shifting priorities, unclear ownership, and feedback that arrives only when something goes wrong. When roles and goals are fuzzy, high performers waste time chasing approvals, duplicating work, or second-guessing decisions. The emotional cost is just as high. Uncertainty fuels anxiety and can make even confident employees feel incompetent. The leadership lesson is that clarity is not bureaucratic, it is humane. Good leaders translate strategy into a small set of priorities, define what success looks like, and establish who decides what. Practical moves include writing down expectations for projects, documenting trade-offs, and using simple mechanisms such as a one-page brief, a weekly priority check, and a clear escalation path. Clarity also demands consistency. If a leader changes direction, they should explain why, what is no longer important, and how the team should adjust. Over time, teams learn they can trust the map, not just the mood of the boss. The result is better execution and a culture where people feel safe taking initiative because they understand the rules of the game. Thirdly, feedback that builds rather than breaks. Many people can name a boss who used feedback as a weapon, public criticism, vague negativity, moving goalposts, or performance conversations that felt like personal attacks. This topic explores why damaging feedback practices corrode confidence and silence dissent. When employees fear humiliation or retaliation, they stop surfacing risks, asking questions, and experimenting. The organization then loses learning speed and becomes dependent on a few insiders who can tolerate the leader's style. The leadership lesson is that effective feedback is a skill with structure. It is specific, timely, and tied to observable behavior and outcomes, not personality. It also includes recognition, because only hearing what is wrong produces defensive, risk-averse teams. A healthier approach is to establish regular check-ins, agree on standards, and separate coaching from evaluation when possible. Managers should ask for feedback too, because two-way exchange signals respect and builds psychological safety. Another key is calibration, comparing expectations across a team to reduce favoritism and bias. Done well, feedback becomes a shared language for growth rather than a surprise verdict. Teams that trust feedback processes move faster, collaborate more easily, and handle conflict with less drama. Fourthly, power, bias, and belonging in everyday leadership choices, workplace harm is not always loud. It often appears in small decisions, who gets stretch assignments, whose ideas are credited, whose mistakes are forgiven, and who is labeled difficult. This topic addresses how bad bosses can amplify bias through favoritism, gatekeeping, or a narrow definition of professionalism. When some employees must prove themselves repeatedly while others receive automatic trust, morale declines and collaboration fractures. People may self-censor, disengage, or leave, and the team loses diverse perspectives that improve problem-solving. The leadership lesson is to treat inclusion as a management discipline, not a slogan. Leaders can create fairer systems by making criteria visible for promotions, high-profile projects, and performance ratings. They can rotate opportunities, check whose voices dominate meetings, and build habits that credit contributors accurately. Listening is central, but so is action. When someone reports harm, a leader must respond with accountability, not avoidance. The topic also highlights that belonging increases performance by reducing the cognitive load of navigating politics and stereotyping. When employees believe the playing field is fair, they invest more in the work and in each other. The payoff is both ethical and operational, stronger retention, better ideas, and a healthier culture. Lastly, from surviving bad bosses to becoming a better one, a key value of learning from negative examples is turning frustration to a leadership operating system. This topic focuses on the transition from coping strategies as an employee to intentional practices as a leader. Bad bosses often teach people what not to do, but without a plan, you may repeat the same patterns under pressure. The book's framing encourages readers to extract lessons, identify triggering situations, notice default reactions, and build replacement behaviors that align with your values. Practical leadership growth includes setting communication norms, defining how decisions are made, and creating rituals that keep you accountable, such as regular one-on-ones, documented priorities, and post-project retrospectives. It also means managing your own stress and ego, because many harmful behaviors stem from insecurity, control needs, or fear of looking wrong. Readers can benefit from reflecting on moments when they stayed silent, overworked, or accepted unfair treatment, then designing guardrails so their teams do not face the same conditions. Ultimately, the topic emphasizes that good leadership is not about charisma, it is about consistency. When you commit to predictable standards, transparent processes, and respectful interactions, you replace anxiety with focus and help people do their best work. In conclusion, this book is best for new managers, experienced leaders, and high-performing individual contributors who want to understand workplace dysfunction without getting stuck in complaint mode. It is also valuable for anyone recovering from a difficult boss because it reframes painful experiences as usable insight, what behaviors to avoid, what boundaries to set, and what standards to demand from leadership. The benefit to a reader's life is practical and personal. Professionally, you gain a clearer lens for recognizing harmful patterns early, from constant urgency to unclear expectations and biased decision-making. Personally, you learn how healthier leadership protects energy, confidence, and relationships at work. By emphasizing clarity, feedback, fairness, and boundary-respectful communication, the book supports long-term career sustainability rather than short bursts of overwork. Compared to many leadership titles that focus on ideal traits or motivational principles, this approach stands out by using bad leadership as a diagnostic tool. That angle makes the guidance feel grounded in real scenarios that readers have likely lived through. It is worth buying because it helps you convert everyday workplace frustrations into a concrete leadership playbook you can apply immediately, whether you are leading a team now or preparing to lead one soon. If you would like to support Mita Malik, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.